Amazon takes 40 to 50% of your revenue, up to 50%. That's 15% in referral fees, plus another 25 to 35% in fulfillment and logistics. And somehow, brands are still scaling profitably on the platform. This episode will tell you how. I'm Matt Leidy, your host of Cartworthy. I do e-commerce marketing at Client Boost, a performance marketing agency for D2C brands. And today, I'm talking with Mark Lathrum, founder of Tide Commerce, an Amazon growth agency. Mark's been in the Amazon ecosystem for almost a decade, helping D2C brands navigate the platform's economics, settings, and scale from their first launch to eight figures in Amazon revenue. But here's the thing. Most Shopify brands approach Amazon completely wrong. They launch too early, spend like they would on Meta, and end up cannibalizing their D2C channel. In this episode, you'll learn when to launch, how to price higher without complaints, and why wholesale can destroy your Amazon strategy. Plus, the real economics that make the high fees still worth it. Let's get into it. All right, Mark. So you're a Shopify brand. You've been around for a while. You've crossed that seven-figure mark. Mm-hmm. You're maybe low seven figures on your D2C site. What's the right time? What's the right resources? When should you start considering, hey, maybe I should add on Amazon as a new sales channel? Mm-hmm. Let's like dive into that.
Yeah. So I think, you know, the good news is if you've reached that on Shopify as a channel, then it's going to make selling on Amazon a heck of a lot easier. The days of just being a single brand on Amazon with no other channel to support is really over. It's nearly impossible to survive. But when you do have that either retail leg or Shopify leg, it makes it so much easier. So I think the right time is, it's just a matter of scale. Once you've hit, you know, those numbers that you're talking about, it's just an opportunity to unlock incrementality on Amazon and to acquire a customer that may be missing because they're that person that says, I only buy on Amazon. I want same day shipping.
Yeah, totally. So is there any extra considerations in terms of time, resource, skill, investment, like timeline? Would love to like, okay, cool. I think I want to go on Amazon. Like how they decided that, but how do they really know and make sure that's like a good choice to then move forward with it?
Yeah, I think, you know, some of the big checkbox items are going to be, do you have inventory? Do you have inventory to sustain, right? So, you know, coming out of the post-COVID world, inventory supply chains have stabilized, but just making sure you have the inventory to support, that's going to be the blood flow of the channel. And then, you know, it is a world where you will want to pair up, you know, with an expert in the space, whether it's a freelancer or an agency who can really weed through a lot of the red tape with account setup and things of that nature. So there is, you know, that reduces the time commitment, but it may increase, you know, the upfront, you know, cost of working with a freelancer agency. So I think from a time perspective, you can, you know, reduce that by pairing up with an expert and then, you know, really lean on that expert to understand, okay, what's the dollar amount need to spend to start generating sales on Amazon? Usually say 10 to 20% of Amazon revenue is needed, and then kind of dialing in those KPIs to understand what you're getting yourself into.
I stole my next question about the margins and the advertising cost a bit, but a few more things about the money and investment. From my understanding, there's like there's a couple ways you can work with Amazon, like FBM and FBA. What is the difference? What would you recommend? And then like the different fees associated.
Yep. So FBM, I would say only launch that if you absolutely, like if you have a really big bulky product, like if you're selling furniture or something, you know, or a mattress, right? Like something huge, then you're going to really have no choice but to go FBM just because of the fees associated with FBA. But I will say 95% of the time, FBA is going to make more sense from financial point of view, conversion rate point of view, and just overall friction, just reducing that operationally. So I would highly recommend going FBA. It's going to work 95% of the time. And then as far as the fee structure, Amazon will basically take 40 to 50%. So I want to break that down because that's the same reaction that a lot of brands have. 15% of that is going to be off the top with their referral fee. And then the additional 20 to 25% there is going to be pick, pack, ship, and then also you know, postage to the end consumers. You know, if you look at it on Shopify, you have your warehouse 3PL fees, you have your postage, and it's kind of all lumped in there. But what brands do find is the advertising cost will tend to be cheaper than Meta. So you kind of make it back, and it's really important to build that that P&L out as you go to launch.
Yeah, that at first I was like, what? What's the point? When you put it together, the pieces like that, it makes sense.
Yep.
And so advertising is generally lower CAC.
Yep.
Just FBA is fulfilled by Amazon. Just to say that in case this is your first time. Just want to say that. FBM was fulfilled by merchant.
Yep, exactly.
So the CAC might be lower, and Amazon has a shit ton of customers, but what is there a scale difference? Can you scale as much as you can? Can you spend ramp up the spend and get the same volume as you can direct to your site? Is it category dependent? What are the expectations or the forecasting? How can you start to set that on that front?
Yeah, so it's very common. We will work with brands that are going from Shopify to Amazon for the first time, and they're usually in a position where they're like, "Hey, we want to gain more revenue. We need to add more revenue to our P&L." Whether to hit a year-end forecast or, into 2026. So the temptation is, hey, let's spend to get market share right away, right? And on Meta, you can do that. You can spend $100,000 on a new product in a month, right? It may not look pretty, but you can do it. On Amazon, you are going to be throttled a bit. When you are new, you're not going to have reviews. You're not going to have organic ranking and search results. So you have to earn all of that in a really smart way. Because if you try to spend, 10, 20, 30, 40,000 out of the gate, you're just taking your money and lighting it on fire. So by month 5, month 6, month 7 after launch, you can get to that 15 to 20% of revenue ad spend. But in the beginning, it's a little bit more throttled, maybe more in the low thousands of spend as you gain reviews. Because Amazon wants to show ads to product pages they know they're going to convert because they're getting that 15% referral fee.
Yeah, that they're incentivized to do that.
Yep.
And then a good experience and there's no refunds. And
exactly.
Or yeah, makes sense. Okay, awesome. Talking about products and SKUs and actually uploading them to Amazon, I'm sure it depends, but I'm going to push you past that answer because that's every question in marketing. What do you recommend for brands at this earlier stage? If they have, just throw them all up there, throw your best sellers, throw ones that are different margin. We'd love to hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, so cannibalization is a huge, huge, something that we address. And we're an Amazon agency, right? So we should be like, hey, let's put everything on there. Let's go. But we always approach it from let's protect D2C. That's how you built your brand, that you have a community, you have email addresses, text, you can retarget. It's just so robust, right? But at the same time, Amazon, you can get so much incrementality with meeting the customer with, where they are. So what we do with merchandising is it's two part. We want to understand what's your profitability or contribution margin just on Shopify. Let's compare that to Amazon, right? You can play with the Amazon price and you can go $2, $3, $4 more, on Amazon, and you'll be surprised. Customers like that one-day shipping and they're willing to pay a lot. We had a brand who's sold tens of thousands of units and they've gotten 2 complaints in 5 years that their Amazon price is higher. So it rarely happens. And then what we like to do is just be really methodical, start small, maybe avoid the best sellers at first so we don't cannibalize, so it doesn't throw off signal on Facebook, on Meta ads. And maybe we do bundles, higher AOV to protect margin. Maybe we do not the best sellers, maybe some other products, or maybe we do 2 packs, 3 packs, right? So we really want to be patient and start methodically and then scale up from there as the brand gets more comfort, as we get more data, and just ensure that there's no cannibalization. Because at the end of the day, launching on Amazon can be mysterious and it can be risky, thinking about the perception, but you're in complete control the whole time.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And also, as well, you mentioned about the slow scaling up earlier. A brand should not expect to, hey, I need revenue next month.
Yeah.
I, like a lot of it, Amazon's the choice. Like That's not what you're recommending. Just want to super drive that point home.
We have seen it happen. Like we have seen it where they turn on and maybe they're doing 500,000 on their website, or they're doing, you know, 200,000 on their website. And from day one, they're doing 20,000 or 50,000 on Amazon. But that comes with growing pains. So in a perfect world, if you're in an opportunity where you're okay with a 3-month runway, you know, it's being methodical, protecting D2C, and really having that 90-day, 120-day ramp up. That is usually best. If you have a gun to your head and you have to say, we need to get that revenue today, we can do it. It's just going to be a roller coaster. Amazon will perform if you have brand presence already outside of Amazon. It absolutely will perform.
Yeah, I suppose it totally depends on the initial traffic and acquisition source to your D2C. Meta, it may be slower, but if you're going viral on TikTok, and that's a separate episode we're going to do.
Yep.
People are just like, where is it? I'm an Amazon buyer, you know, because they're used to TikTok shop versus Amazon. So I imagine that's a factor.
Yeah. Yeah. We have seen, you know, it's interesting. Meta, and the ad spend there and the brand awareness, Amazon absolutely benefits from it. Like I said, very in our Amazon silo, but we'll be the first ones to tell you it does benefit from it. But it's about riding off that halo to grow Amazon and then contribute to new customer acquisition on Amazon through PPC, through on-page optimization, and not cannibalizing D2C. Like that's the needle you need to thread, and there's a roadmap for it.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. So you've decided to go on Amazon, you've found the right partner, you're ramping up, you have enough inventory, all the things are checked. Speaking of like avoiding silos, what can the brand do on the brand side to make it more successful? Is it things like sending traffic to a different landing page then to Amazon? Is it email, SMS? Like what can a brand do to put themselves in the best foot forward on their side?
Yeah, I think, you know, being open and willing to participate in like the Prime Days, the Black Friday, Cyber Mondays, you know, we don't want to discount your brand to death. We don't want to create that doom loop of constant discounting, but it does help cut the line and propel things forward, especially if you have a product that can be repurchased. So, you know, taking advantage of those events to gain momentum, to gain credibility in the algorithm, to get more ranking. So that's a big one. Another one is just, you know, allowing ad spend to happen on the platform. So 10% of revenue is conservative, 20 to 25% is aggressive, and really leaning into that and getting learnings. I think that's a big one too. And then I think a third one that's interesting, which creates a nice play between both platforms, is if you have a text message list or an email list that's dormant, that hasn't purchased on your website, Amazon is one of the best conversion vehicles in the world. You know, it's like, I order things all the time and it shows up on my door. So I'm like, wait, what did I order? You know, it's just because it's so easy to buy. It's like Christmas almost when you get that too. So, you know, being able to leverage what you've built up there, not necessarily going to your customers who are always purchasing, you know, but using some of that email marketing as well to cut the line with growth on Amazon is interesting.
This episode is brought to you by Client Boost, the marketing agency I work at. We help 7- and 8-figure brands, even all the way up to 9-figure, with Meta, Google Media Buying, Ad Creative, SEO, landing pages, and CRO. If you need help with any of those, reach out, clientboost.com. You get hit a free marketing plan or reach out to contact form. We'll chat with you, see if we're a good fit, see if we can help you out. Thanks. Back to the episode.
Same.
Sweet. Was now I'm going to shift gears a little bit. Who is a bad fit for Amazon, even though they've reached both a few brands have reached that $2 million a year mark? You said who should do it or what's a good use case, but who shouldn't do it? Who should avoid it? Like, no, almost no matter what.
Yeah. So I think there's use cases. Like if you're a large brand, you're rolling out a new product. If you have a new product that's untested, you're not sure what the reviews are going to do, or if it's so complicated that, you know, it is apt for negative reviews. You can be fine as a brand as a 4-star, 4.5, even 3.5-star. You can still make it work. But if you don't have everything worked out, and it doesn't need to be perfect, it does not need to be perfect at all, we tell brands. But like, if you're a bit weary of like, hey, this is version 1, wait, like you will get a lot of negative reviews, right? So I think that's one. I think another would be, you know, if you just don't have the inventory runaway, because Amazon will pick up. But like, the reason why I'm not listing out a lot of things on why not to, it's because you can dial Amazon up as much as you want or down as much as you want. You know, it's if you want to just dip your toe in there, you can, and you'll have some type of presence. And then if you want to have a massive presence, you can do that and put your whole catalog on there. So I think it's more so, you know, how heavy do you want to go into it from day one? And I think that's like the most important thing to evaluate. But if you're a brand that has amassed that much scale, you know, Amazon, you know, brands are, or customers are probably searching your product on Amazon, so you may as well capture them.
I'm sure you hear pushback or this question often, but Mark, and you kind of alluded to this earlier, I don't have my customer data. I'm not building that relationship. I'm not getting their email. I can't retarget. I can't send them follow-ups. Like, what's your counter to that? Because it's kind of valid, but still plenty of brands do it. So what's the counter?
Yeah, I mean, our top of our wish list with Amazon is having that customer data, because the magic that you can create on Shopify, whether it's retargeting or messaging, is awesome, right? And that's undeniable. But where we think, you know, with Amazon is they have built out their capabilities a bit more to drive LTV. So you have subscribe and save that you can offer, right? So that's going to build recurring revenue, which is super important. You can do brand tailored promotions now, which are, you know, and you know, those who viewed or those who purchased in the past, you can serve them with a coupon that is a retargeted coupon to get them to come back. Amazon now more than ever has provided tools. You can't own the data, but there are tools now to really retarget them. And you can retarget with ads as well. So those are a few pillars, not as extensive as Shopify. And then I think the biggest thing is just being able to secure new customers, right? It's like, yes, in an ideal world, it would be awesome to be able to secure these new customers, put them in a retention funnel, increase LTV, do all the magic that you can do on Shopify. But I'll also take a world where, if I can't have that world, I'll take a world where I can just acquire a new customer on Amazon, right? Then not have it at all. So I think, like, you know, we exist in an environment on Amazon where Amazon's the big bad boss and they own the customer and they do a lot of marketing around it to get prime customers for you. But, you know, you can create a decent world for yourself with some of those tools and then also acquiring new customers.
Do you want some profit or zero profit? It seems like, I'm sure you can be unprofitable on Amazon, but it seems like from what you're saying so far in my background knowledge on it, it's less volatile or less risky than D2C. Was that fair to say, or what's your reaction to that?
I think that going onto Amazon when you have a presence off of Amazon and brand awareness, it is a given that you will generate revenue. So the risk, you've already done a lot of the de-risking by having a brand presence, and then you just want to work a good strategy to not cannibalize D2C, which absolutely exists through some of the things we talked about with merchandising, having an increased price, etc. So I think, like those are kind of like the big points of de-risking Amazon. Amazon's not a channel where you're going to spend tens of thousands of dollars and not get a return. Like, you're going to know and you're going to get a return, and it's going to be pretty linear. And then over time, it can become a really durable incremental channel for you.
Sick. That makes sense to me. More logistically, these were all more like getting started, intro, what to expect. On the logistics side, we've mentioned inventory once or twice already.
Yep.
But I'm more curious, do most brands send the inventory to Amazon from their manufacturer or from the 3PL? Or does it depend?
We have both. I would say 80% go from the 3PL and 20% from the manufacturer. Most, if not all, 3PLs know how to send to Amazon now. And we would say that, 80% are from the 3PL, just because you can cut down some of the quantities. You can do small parcel if you need to. You can do LTL pallets, right? So you're just a little bit more dynamic. But we work with brands all the time to set up their supply chain the most efficiently. And, you know, you can absolutely save some money and go from manufacturer. You just want to make sure you're not sending in so much inventory where you're overstocked, and then you get hit with inventory fees with Amazon. So there's like this Goldilocks little, you don't want to be understocked, you don't want to be overstocked. It's kind of 70 to 90 days of inventory on hand is usually like the perfect window.
Yeah, super helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just because the it was like, oh, well, my 3PL doesn't do Amazon. So then you have to a switching thing or yeah, but that's super helpful to kind of dig in through that.
Yeah. And like on the 3PL side, like we have partners that are really, really good with Amazon too. So if there's like ever any brands that need a good 3PL, we've got a handful of them. And then it's nice. Manufacturers have been a lot more apt with sending to Amazon too.
Yeah, because I imagine that changes their like, oh, I have to send two different, the same thing as well. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, exactly.
That makes sense. Okay, cool. Yeah. Although the last piece for me, my initial questions is you lose some of that brand experience, like you've talked about logistically. Is that like the packaging, the inserts, like do you have to change anything on that end from, or just wondering how like that last piece?
Yeah, that's a huge thing that we focus on. Like our big thing is brand integrity. So whether they're shopping in retail on Shopify or on Amazon, they should have the same brand experience, right? The layout is going to be different. You know, how the bullets, the images are shown, it's going to be different, right? You have to fit in a box on Amazon, but it should feel consistent. So that's a big thing. And same with packaging, that customer journey. I think one big thing is if you have it in store, if you have it on Shopify, keep it. Even if it says, you know, additional marketing material in there. If it exists on Shopify or exists in retail, it's fine with Amazon. What you need to stay away from is inserts that say, leave us a review, right? You know, gray hat, black hat, items like that, that are really, you know, forcing people to leave a review and incentivizing them to leave a review. That's a big no-no with Amazon for good reason. And, you know, that's things you want to stay away from. But any educational materials, anything that is really brand-centered, and if it already exists on Shopify and already exists in retail, it's generally a green light for Amazon.
Sweet. That's helpful to know. So any last, like, big things that you would want to make sure I ask or you want to talk about, I can tee you up. You typically get asked on sales calls, like this more intro level starting out points. We can do a future episode on advanced or like pro or expert stuff. But yeah, anything else that kind of you'd love to mention?
Yeah, I think cannibalization is a big one. Like we mentioned that here. And I think just like, I think now all the brands that you see, you know, whether it be, you know, Liquid Death or Dude Wipes, you know, those big CPG brands, Grunge, right? It's omni-channel. And yeah, all those, we just live in such a frenetic world now where you can buy something on TikTok Shop, you can walk into Whole Foods, or you can go to their website, and then you're being targeted anywhere from Google to Meta. And we live in such a frenetic, widespread digital and retail world that having Amazon as a pillar within that, as another opportunity to, you know, acquire a customer, it's and de-risking that with the brand awareness you've already built up is huge. So it can seem like a big jump, but you can break it into bite-sized pieces. So yeah,
makes sense. Maybe not Amazon related, and if you don't have a strong POV or answer, I'll just cut it. But at this stage, similarly, people might be considering like fair or wholesale or
yeah,
like small retail. Is that like, hey, we should do that at the same time, we should break it up, or how can you like balance those approaches, how can you like synergize or whatnot? Yep. So yeah,
that's a great question. So the big thing with Amazon, be very careful with your wholesale and fair distribution strategy, because 60% of the time it may end up on Amazon before you even launch on Amazon or as you launch on Amazon. And what happens there is they will lower their price. It can suppress your listing. It can just, in a nutshell, creates issues when you have multiple sellers. So what you'll want to do is we would recommend before jumping into fair, before jumping into wholesale, go to Amazon, plant your flag in the ground there. I'm here. I'm controlling this, you know, marketplace. Amazon does allow any seller to sell their product on Amazon. It's a fair marketplace policy, right? but you can control how your supply chain looks. And the cleaner the supply chain, whether it's just going direct to retail, no other spillage leakage there, direct on Shopify, no other leakage, and staying away from leakage on independent wholesalers and especially Fair, that will just allow you to capture the whole pie on Amazon and not have to compete against different pricing and resellers there.
Really good point that hadn't considered. Glad I asked. Yeah. Super last question for sure this time.
Cool.
So you're biased. You may be biased. You're an Amazon agency.
Yeah.
But I think you'll just give me your honest advice. Does it ever make sense to have a full-time Amazon employee at a brand? And if it does, at what scale is that?
Yeah, I think it does. Like, it does at a certain scale. When you start passing that 10 to 15 million, like, I guess call it 7 to 12 million mark above that, potentially on Amazon. So when you start, let's just call it 10 million above on Amazon, there could be a world where you have someone in-house quarterbacking the different initiatives internally with an agency. So it is rare to see someone just 100% in-house who owns it. It does happen, right? It does happen 100%. But the usual case studies that we'll see of larger brands that have crossed that 10 million a year mark on Amazon, they have someone who has a core specialty on growth, who quarterbacks what the goals and internal KPIs that need to be reported on, the direction need to go, and then manages that agency and says, this is the three things we need to focus on. It's retention, you know, increasing LTV, and then also making sure we're hitting forecasts and budget profitably, right? That's the mandate. And they're quarterbacking that. And that, we love that because it's just an extra resource. We get quick turnarounds with creative responses, et cetera, instead of having to go to maybe a VP of sales who's dealing with wholesale accounts, you know, Shopify and everything else.
Yeah. And I imagine the skill set and experience that you have multiple roles and team members like on an account, that's not as easy to hire in like math wise. Always the balancing act and equation of, oh, well, I hire one Amazon person, but they're not as good as the agency at everything. So there's always that.
Yep. Yeah. Cause it spans from like problem solving to logistics and like supply chain management of like getting inventory in, right? And there's everything in between. So it's like, you know, that's where we usually see someone who has had like a background in ads or a background to something else on Amazon and then leans on the agency for other core competencies.
Amazing. Cool, dude. Super helpful. Appreciate this is a crash course. I feel like it was pretty comprehensive.
Awesome.
For the intro episode. Anything else you want to leave people with, add on, or kind of point people to?
I think you hit it. I'm really glad you asked the wholesale question because that's a huge one, especially in CPG. And when you get consumables, right? So I think you hit all the awesome, really good questions, and I'm hoping I provided some good info there.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, Amazon, I'm like a rookie on, so super helpful. Catch you on the next episode. So here's the deal. For most brands, it's not Shopify or Amazon. It's often both at the right time. Amazon ends up being incremental opportunity to capture those customers who only buy on Amazon. You have a lot of strategic levers in terms of the pricing, your margin protection, and avoiding cannibalization with your other sales channels. Thanks again to Mark for breaking this down for us. Really appreciate it. Quick plug, Client Boost, the agency I work at. We provide a bunch of services for D2C brands like yours. Meta and Google media buying, ad creative, CRO and landing pages, SEO, and our own in-house BI and data analytics team. Hit us up at clientboost.com to get a conversation started. See if we're a good fit. We work with both B2B and D2C, and we have specialists. So you're not having a B2B person working on your D2C account, vice versa. Just a heads up there. Would love for to see if we're a good fit, see if we can help you out. Thank you so much for listening and tuning into another episode of Cartworthy. I'll catch you on the next one.